are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, February 25th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, we're back after our typically ill-timed vacation, during which Bernie Sanders breaking fundraising records, anticipating more announcements on that front soon. Meanwhile, Elizabeth Warren has a non-radical plan for radical impact. Donald Trump heads to Vietnam for a North Korean summit. Total denuclearization. And speaking of which, lawsuits filed against Trump's emergency declaration. And as the Green New Deal is debated amongst Democrats, the Trump administration forms a prestigious climate denial panel. And payback for Mitch McConnell, one of his biggest fundraisers, climate denier Kelly Craft, now ambassador to the UN. And while the U.S. is edging toward war with Venezuela, and in New York, the public advocate vote is tomorrow. Vote if you're a New York City voter. Speaking of elections, there'll be a new one in North Carolina's 9th. I guess the apple fell just a little too far from the tree that the kids' testimony against dad. And Democrats to investigate Trump finances and NRA's financing and introduce legislation to tighten background checks. And lastly, Supreme Court limits state and local asset seizure. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. What is that noise? Oh, yeah, that's ill-timed.
It's the kettle.
Ill-timed. Can we turn that off? Sounds like an airplane is taking off. We're back, ladies and gentlemen, after our break. And, of course, over the week, some one of the best days in politics, I felt like, in a while. The day that Bernie Sanders announced and Elizabeth Warren came out with her universal daycare proposal. I've been waiting for one of those. And we will get into all of that. Bernie Sanders, of course, smashed fundraising records. Less than 24 hours had raised $6 million, which was like, I think, four times the next biggest amount that's been raised. Kamala Harris, I think, did 1.5 over the course of 24 or 48 hours. I don't know what it was, but
I gave my $27.
There you go.
So did I. Full disclosure.
And I think we're anticipating another announcement soon as to, you know, what, how much they'll have raised over the course of 1 week. And just impressive numbers. And at one point he was asked, what's different this time around? And he said, we're going to win. And he ended up naming as his campaign manager Faz Shakur, who is a who has been basically building out the ACLU's political operation. And of course, some people might be aware that one of his senior advisors is a Majority Report producer emeritus, Josh Horton, Josh also, congratulations.
Oh, I did not know that.
Got married last weekend. That's where I went off to. And there was a little bit of tension. Anticipating things that were happening. But
Mazel tov, Josh.
Yes.
Times two.
And I think for his honeymoon, he and his wife went to Washington, D.C. We will get we'll get into the Bernie stuff and the Elizabeth Warren stuff. And also, as the Green New Deal is heating up amongst the Democrats. Also, and please remind me to talk about this. I don't want to start off this way, but when I was in Wisconsin for the wedding, for the big wedding, I stopped by JustCoffee.coop, and I went with another producer emeritus of the show from the way back, Stephen Sherrill, and good guy to go to because he was very inquisitive about the coffee production, and it's fascinating what these guys do. And it's, he said to me, he goes, you know, I would have, he said, like, I was, Sherrill, the idea of buying Just Coffee, he was sort of sold on beforehand. But he, after spending about 20-25 minutes with a couple of these guys there, he's like, I can't remember how he phrased it, but he said, it would be unconscionable for me not to buy coffee from them. The way that we went into the table. I'll tell you a quick story. So, and I tried to do an Instagram live video of it, but then I lost reception. And it's not a huge operation. But they were explaining they have a room where they taste the coffee, right? Where they have a professional coffee taster come in. And they were explaining that, you know, sometimes they get into some issues because, you know, coffee, the quality of a coffee is subject to the weather and to, like, sometimes there's funguses or stuff like this. And so what most coffee roasters and suppliers do is they go and buy coffee from one farm. And if one year their coffee is, you know, there was too much water and it's a little bit acidic or whatever it is, they just wash their hands of that farm and walk away. And whatever happens to that farm happens to that farm. They go, you know, a couple of towns over or to a slightly different region. They get a different coffee that substitutes for, you know, whatever they've been selling. But Just Coffee is, it's a co-op, but it's also fair trade. But they go further than that. I mean, these are movement people. And so they were explaining that, like, you know, what we do is, if a farm is having a tough year or their coffee is, you know, coming in at like an 86 instead of an 88 rating or whatever it is, we stay with the farmers and we figure out a blend with other coffees that we have that can bring that coffee that we package back up to par as to where it is in terms of the quality. And they're ultimately like, look, sometimes that costs us a little bit more. Sometimes it may knock a point or two off of the quality of the coffee for one batch. But we're in this with a long haul with these small farmers in Central and Latin America. And they have a different calculus as to what is ultimately the most important thing. So, I was terribly impressed by that, and also got to take a picture of myself with the Majority Report blend that they have there. I didn't want to say anything at the time. They have Poster Marin's coffee up, but not of the Majority Report. But that's no big deal. I mean, it was big enough for me to remember it, but it wasn't a big deal. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate, you know, the rest, coupon code, majority, get 10% off. But it was... I don't want to say it was the highlight of my trip because I went for a wedding and the wedding was great, but it was the second highlight of my trip.
Wow. And they get coffee from the Zapatistas. Is that correct?
They started out there and they do. I mean, I think folks in that area, I don't know specifically, but it's good. It's good stuff. You can go onto their site and read more about what's going on there. But the wedding was fun, and Madison was fun. It was interesting to be back there because I hadn't been back there since the protest in 2011. And so just being on that square around the Capitol could still feel the energy. I think for most people, it's already dissipated because it's been 8 years. But for me, it was, that's what I remember that place as. So, okay, let's get into this. First, let's start with this, though. This is fascinating stuff. Apparently, over the week, AOC made a decision about the way she was going to staff. And, you know, they're attacking her from all different sides now. The New York Post is upset because she doesn't have set up her local office yet or something to that effect. But she decided that she did not want there to be such a steep hierarchy in her office, in her congressional office. So instead of like hiring some old, old hand or at being chief of staff, probably she went with someone maybe less senior, I think, and was going to basically raise the pay of the entry level people. I mean, a nice gesture. It's a different approach. It's not controversial, right? I mean, who could find issue with this? Oh, Fox and Friends.
Let's get a load of this, right? A tweet went out yesterday. She said she is leadership begins at home or whatever, however she put it. And she's basically announcing that she is going to redistribute the money appropriated to her congressional office mm-hmm. to make sure that the entry-level staffers get a fair share of money. Now, let me show you the numbers here, right? She puts this out. She wants $52,000 for the entry-level staff salary for anyone in her office. Here's the problem. You've got to find a way to get money to pay the entry-level people, so you're taking...
Pause it. So, is she going to rob from a bank? How is she going to get this money? This is a problem. Let's go.
People, so you're taking, she plans to take that from the chief of staff.
It's beautiful.
Senior staffers who would normally make $80,000 or normally make $154,000 for the chief of staff, probably only going to make about $80,000.
Every Capitol Hill office has a limited amount of money to pay their staff, right? So you have to decide how to allocate it. She said, everyone in my office will pay a living wage. So I'm going to pay $15 an hour, which means your entry level intern is making $52,000 while your chief of
staff.
Pause
it for 1 second. I don't know if this guy's ever worked anywhere else. Maybe they have a weird way of doing things at Fox. But your entry-level intern, there's no such thing as an entry-level intern. All interns are not even entry-level. Entry-level is a term that means sort of first level in terms of within an organization. Or sometimes it can mean like entry-level, like across the board, first level jobs that people get. Now, an internship is not a job because you don't get paid for it, or you get paid sub-entry-level wages. So she's not paying an intern the entry-level wages. She's paying either the entry-level people, or maybe she's hiring people who are not entry-level. I don't know. But he's got that wrong. But that's a minor point.
Living wage. So I'm going to pay $15 an hour, which means your entry-level intern is making $52,000, while your chief of staff, who is a very important role in a congressional office, now is capped at 80, as opposed to the actual market rate at Capitol Hill, which is closer to $150,000. So everyone's between 52 and 80. It's actually socialism and communism on display.
Yeah, I mean,
you see that? It's socialism and communism, and we have actually... We've actually done some research, and we found a graph that shows this. The chief of staff pay, as you can see, $154,000. That's capitalism. When you get down to $125,000, that's socialism. Under $125,000, that's communism.
Mm-hmm. Story checks out.
And then you can't see it because it goes off the paper. But if you get further below, it's socialism and communism. Socialism times communism is that's the way that you get there.
Yep. Communism, it's like Karl Marx said. Communism is when you pay your interns more, and the more you pay your interns, the more communist it is.
There you go.
We're taking on the People's Policy Project.
I would love to like have a focus group of Fox and Friends viewers and just sort of like get like, what do they take away from that? Like, does that work? I suspect it does, right? Like, it doesn't have to work on 100% of the people. Even if it works on like 10 or 15%, the rest of them are just like, yeah, well, she's a socialist communist anyways. So I don't know if that's exactly it. Like, they don't even think that much about it, right? That's the way it works.
Well, maybe like with every time they try to make her look bad, a small handful of people are like, hey, actually, that looks pretty good.
Yeah, I feel like it's safer for them just to do what Glenn Beck does and like paint pictures of her and don't actually respond to anything she actually does, but call her like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and stuff.
Right,
like that.
Exactly.
Oh, crazy Ocasio-Cortez.
Folks, has your company outgrown QuickBooks? Are shared spreadsheets, manual processes, and legacy systems costing you time and money? Introducing NetSuite by Oracle, the business management software that handles every aspect of your business in an easy-to-use cloud platform. With NetSuite, you can save time, money, and unneeded headaches by managing sales, HR, finance, and accounting instantly right from your desk or even your phone. Thousands of the best-known and fastest-growing companies use NetSuite to manage their business, and now it's available to you. Better yet, it's more affordable than you think, because right now NetSuite is offering you valuable insights to help you overcome the obstacles that are holding you back free. Don't miss out on unleashing your business's full potential with this free guide, Crushing the Five Barriers to Growth. You'll learn how to acquire new customers, increase profits, and finally get real visibility into your cash flow. Get NetSuite's guide, Crushing the Five Barriers to Growth, at netsuite.com/majority now. That's netsuite.com/majority to download their free Crushing the Five Barriers to Growth guide today, netsuite.com/majority. Also, you've heard me talk about what I did when I had my first kid and my second kid. Well, I got term life insurance. And you, too, can protect your loved ones with the peace of mind of life insurance. Think you can't afford it? Chances are SelectQuote can help you get it for less than a dollar a day. SelectQuote comparison shops up to 10 highly rated companies, including Prudential, Banner Life, Mutual of Omaha, and others, to find you the company with the best rates. For example, SelectQuote could find a 35-year-old man a $500,000 policy for under $19 a month. That's less than a dollar a day. A cup of coffee a day costs you more than that. SelectQuote's breakthrough technology allows them to quickly match you with the best insurance company to find your best policy. Plus, the quotes are free. I can tell you that I bought the first amount of term life insurance from a life insurance salesman. I'm not going to say his name. And at the time, I was like, I don't know, 4 years out from quitting smoking. And he was like, oh, we'll change. My experience, it'll change. After five, you can go back and ask them for a rate adjustment. And then the guy disappeared on me. And I couldn't get the rate adjustment. Let me just put it this way. You would think that you would have a great experience with an actual agent, and I got news for you. Not the case. My second term insurance policy I did online, and much happier, frankly. I got a second round when Saul was born. Just bumped it up a little bit. You got two kids. But I'll tell you, there's nothing better than that feeling of I've done it, because as soon as your kid's born, in particular, maybe you have other people in your life that it's important that you protect them. You know you should be doing it, and the earlier the better, because the younger you are, the cheaper it is. Makes sense. SelectQuote could save you time and money. Get your free quote at selectquote.com/majority today. That's selectquote.com/majority for your free quote. Don't put off protecting your family for another day. Selectquote.com/majority. Get full details on the example policy at selectquote.com/commercials. Your premium could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states. And lastly, I got to tell you that every 2 seconds, there's a new victim of identity theft, which means a criminal could be spending your money, applying for loans in your name, and even damaging your credit, the good credit you've worked so hard to build. Unfortunately, you can miss certain threats to your identity by just checking bank statements and monitoring your credit. Good thing there's LifeLock Identity Theft Protection. LifeLock uses proprietary technology to detect and alert you on a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. And if you have an issue involving identity theft, one of LifeLock's identity restoration specialists will work to fix it for you. When I was contemplating doing this, I asked people if they had any experience with LifeLock, and I got a couple of emails, and they cited particularly the identity restoration specialists, because that can be a nightmare, I guess, and they needed the help. Of course, no one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but with LifeLock, you get identity theft protection and additional features to help protect your devices against cyber threats for as low as $9.99 a month. Don't waste another second. LifeLock.com/majority now to save 10% on your first year. That's LifeLock.com/majority for 10% off. LifeLock.com/majority. All right, let's dig into Bernie's announcement. In addition to saying at one point, this time is going to be different because we're going to win. And, you know, look, I am most partial to the proposals that Bernie Sanders has proposed and Elizabeth Warren, more or less by far. They seem to be putting forward, and Bernie is yet to really, I think, roll out any new proposals, but certainly the Medicare for All that many of the other candidates have signed on to. And Warren putting out proposals like producing generic drugs, like the one that she announced, and we'll talk about it in a bit, universal daycare. These are important proposals to get out into the conversation. And part of the reason why, and I've spoken to a lot of people about this, who have said in many different ways that we're the campaign 2 or 3 months longer, that primary campaign, had Bernie Sanders gotten into the and decided to run 3 to 6 months earlier and genuinely believed he had a shot at winning when he entered, or even 3 to 6 months, you know, if he had gone in 3 months earlier and he would have picked up that awareness earlier, he could have very well won that primary in 2016. And this time he's going in and he's going in to win it. And that's what he said in his, you know, interview. And that is not, I think people have interpreted that as like some type of measure of confidence. And I think the guy has confidence and whatnot. But I think what it is a tacit admission that the last time he entered the race was because he was running a message campaign. And this time he's running a race to become the nominee.
Not to mention the president.
Well, and then ultimately the president.
Hashtag Bernie would have won.
Well, like I say.
Hashtag Bernie will win.
Martin O'Malley would have won too, I think. But be that as it may, that was then, this is now. Here is Bernie Sanders talking specifically about Howard Schultz, and he had been quiet up to this point about Howard Schultz.
Howard Schultz has now said he would not run as an independent if the Democrats nominate a moderate.
Oh, isn't that nice? Why is Howard Schultz on every television station in this country? Why are you quoting Howard Schultz? Because he's a billionaire, all right? There are a lot of people I know personally who work hard for a living and make $40,000, $50,000 a year, who know a lot more about politics than, in all due respect, does Mr. Schultz. But because we have a corrupt political system, anybody who is a billionaire, who can throw a lot of TV ads on television, suddenly becomes very, very credible. So what Mr. Schultz, What is he, blackmailing the Democratic Party? If you don't nominate Bernie Sanders, he's not going to run? Well, I don't think we should succumb to that kind of blackmail.
The other reason is that he represents an argument that some people make, which is if you're worried about Donald Trump, the Democratic Party, to win voters in various parts of the country, needs to pick somebody who is not so radical. That's also what his theory represents.
Well, I think his deeper theory is, hey, I'm a billionaire, leave me alone. And let me make as much money as I can without paying my fair share of taxes. He's a billionaire. He's thinking of running for president. Suddenly he's a very famous guy. That is a problem with our political system.
I mean, that, you know, not terribly different than what we were saying on the day that Howard Schultz was like all of a sudden on every single TV show, suddenly because he built up a coffee shop into a big business. That
which he, other people have also done.
Yes. That he is perfectly primed to step in and become president and is treated as if he's a serious guy, as opposed to, let's say, Donald Trump. And without any prior policy work, it's just that he went in and he bought Steve Schmidt, and he bought Bill Burton, literally bought them for millions of dollars. And he bought his credibility, and he bought ads, and he bought media time. If I got news for you. If I go buy a 3-page spread in the New York Times, guess what I'm going to get? Somebody's going to write a story about the Majority Report. That's just the fact. And that in and of itself, you know, if it's something as benign as, they did a profile on Sam because he, maybe it's related to his, $2 million buy of ads or whatever it is, but they did a profile on him. You know what? That doesn't have that great of, it's corrupt, but it's not that relevant. Nobody cares. So what? But when it's, they're doing a profile on this guy because he's going to try and run for president. That's where you have the corruption of the political process. And that is, I mean, it's as if Howard Schultz showed up to provide the subtext for a lot of why Bernie's running, which is that we have a system that we have people who have amassed so much money that they have turned us, they're plutocrats now. They had garnered so much money that they have an outsized power, significantly outsized power politically and socially. And that's the problem. So, I don't know, Bernie, I hope, sent him a muffin basket.
Seriously. God, just to watch that, whatever his name is, news guy sit there with a straight face saying, Howard Schultz represents an argument that a third-party billionaire is going to beat Trump. Like, God damn it, that sucks.
Well, the only rationale for Schultz's candidacy is this idea that the Democrats can't become too economically left, because that won't appeal to the voters who supposedly voted Trump because they wanted to screw over the establishment, right? Like, that's the argument. And even in articulating it, it makes no sense.
Yeah. How'd that go the last time around?
Well, but I mean, put that aside for a moment. Just the argument, because it's all you put out there without any data. There's no, this poll says that. It's just an argument that ostensibly sounds reasonable, but if you genuinely articulate the argument, of course it's absurd.
Yeah, and actually there is data that contradicts that.
Well, of course, but they can't get into data when they talk about it, or they won't be able to get the question out of their mouth.
Because it's not the data that's leading to the prominence of the arguments, it's the money behind them.
Yes, and this is what is both so gross and so powerful about Bernie Sanders' ability to raise the kind of money that he raised in the first 24 hours and in the week subsequent to his announcement. Like, this is, if you tell me how much money the candidates have on hand in terms of cash 9 months from now, 10 months from now, after Iowa, after New Hampshire, 13, 14 months out, after Super Tuesday, well, I guess 12 months out now, basically. If you tell me how much money, cash on hand, the candidates have on March 10th or March 6th, I can tell you who the top four candidates are going to be, and maybe three. That's just the reality of this process. When people get out of the race, it's going to be because they don't have cash. Sanders has announced he has over 1 million volunteers that have signed up.
Hell yeah.
For the 2020 campaign. And they are in every single congressional district. 1 million volunteers already. That's nuts. So we'll see. You know, this is, and I'll tell you that you look at, there was polls that came out in New Hampshire, and he's got a decent sized lead there. Probably bigger than most of the states that he will have leads in. But 20 to 25% is a number that could win a lot of these primaries. Kamala Harris is going to be, has a structural advantage on some level because of California as part of Super Tuesday. And although, you know, Iowa and New Hampshire, then South Carolina, then Super Tuesday, March 3rd, I believe it is, next year, 2020. And coming out of those, it's not a winner-take-all type of situation. Coming out of those Super Tuesday, we're going to have a very good sense of, like, who the top five or six candidates are. And money plays a big part, and obviously volunteers do too. But
I think Kamala Harris is the one to beat. I think Bernie and her are going to fight it out.
You know, it's tough. You never know. You never know. Like, somebody could pop out of Iowa that could be surprising, come in at, like, a surprising second. A Rick Santorum situation. And
I've been there.
Who knows?
I've had those.
I don't even want to... Oh, geez. I know what you mean by that, and I don't even want to know that. All right, let's talk about Elizabeth Warren for a bit, because she has come out with two basically, she came out with a big proposal on the same day that Bernie announced, which was one of my favorite days in politics in a long time. On Monday, she announced that her presidential campaign will not have private fundraisers or one-on-one meetings with big donors. That's a big deal. And I imagine Bernie Sanders will probably follow suit. I don't know that he already even hadn't already there, but it's going to be interesting to see if that's the case with, like, a Kamala Harris or with a Cory Booker or a Kristen Gillibrand, or if Joe Biden jumps in, a Joe Biden. It'd be a good thing if they followed suit. It would begin to, you know, in some way, untether their decision making from big donors. Maybe at the very least, it would give, you know, just some indication that you know, they're open to it, let's say. But here is Elizabeth Warren, who also came out with a plan, like I said last week, on a universal child care. And the plan basically has four elements. One It's free for families who live at 200% or less of the poverty line. So, family, I don't know what that is. For family four poverty line, somewhere, I think, in the 20s. And double that, you get free, you get free childcare. Families above 200% of the poverty line pay a sliding scale between 0 and 7% of their income on childcare. Right now, I think the average family something pays somewhere around like 10%, at least. I mean, childcare is expensive, super expensive. And nobody, nobody pays over 7% of their income on childcare. And this would be financed by the wealth tax. And the cost over the course of 10 years is about $700 billion. So $70 billion a year to invest in a program that has huge returns for the kids and for the parents. And frankly, this is before you start to measure. A lot of people are going to go, there are women who want to work. Men maybe who want to work. Who are responsible for their child care. There are men and women who want to take care of their parents. But there are people who are going to go back into the workforce and it's going to generate revenue there. But just in terms of the number, let me tell you how small $70 billion is relative to what we're used to paying for stuff. If you go back and you Google $70 billion, we had a perfect example of like how dramatic an increase in spending $70 billion a year is. And that is how much we added to the military budget last year. $70 billion a year. And virtually no one questioned it.
It was 700?
$70 billion a year. 700 over 10. $70 billion a year. They raised it. There wasn't a moment's of debate. There was no debate. They didn't have to get people on board. They didn't have to prove the efficacy of it. They didn't have to make a case that where our national security is compromised. Nothing. Just penciled it in. I think it may have made one or two mentions on the nightly news, and that's it. This could be done literally with a snap of a finger. And it is also something that we have done before. Between 1943 and 1946, the Lanham Act provided universal child care because obviously we needed women to go and work in the factories for the war effort. And they ramped this up in a matter of months. This was not like we need 15 years to plan for this. It was just boom. I mean, New York City, within a year, got UPK up and running. And frankly, that's an even harder thing to do because you're dealing with, you know, people who not only need to know how to care for children, but need to be able to teach them. We came very close to this type of bill in 1970-something, early 70s. Both houses of Congress had passed a bill very similar to Warren's, and Dick Nixon vetoed it on Pat Buchanan's say-so. So, great proposal, and I want more of this. And the beauty of having Elizabeth Warren proposing these things in this race, it's not just that she might become president and be able to actually execute them, but that others are going to have to follow suit. That others are going to either adopt and sign on to her plan, or they're going to have to beat it. And so this is just the opening salvo. Good for her.
So I just want to say, I think this is a huge step in the right direction. We need childcare. We need it to be affordable, preferably free. I do fear that this program will undermine itself from the beginning if it insists on means testing. And whether or not you think that the current amount that people are being asked to pay for childcare is fair, what happens when you means test things is a few things, right? It becomes vulnerable to attack. So suddenly those
prices... I don't think this is means tested.
It is.
No, you're eligible. Everyone's eligible.
Yeah, but the amount you pay for it is based on your income.
That's true.
That's means testing.
But that's a sliding scale. It's slightly different.
Because they still test your means, right?
Well, they do test your means, but Social Security is also means tested in that regard too. If you're saying that,
I just think anytime,
everybody doesn't get the same amount of Social Security.
Anytime you make people jump through extra hoops to access a program, you're effectively policing the poor, whether or not you intend to. You are limiting access. And this is something the Clintons talked about very explicitly with means testing in the 90s. I'm not saying that this is identical to that, but it creates resentment on the part of people who make more and maybe have to pay more. And it leaves your programs more vulnerable to attack than if they were a universal program. Free childcare for everybody, no questions asked.
I think... There's something to the idea that a universal benefit that is the same for everybody is probably more durable politically. But a means test is a determination of eligibility. Everyone is eligible for this. The question is not eligibility, which is what means test means. The question is how much of a subsidy do you get?
Yeah, it's still not quite.
Well, I mean, that's just
universal.
I'm just talking about what
program
it is,
and we have the money. Like
not,
you just said,
it is not a universal free child care program. That is true. That is true.
And like we have the money, so why, given that fact, would you create any kind of hoops for people to jump through or any extra limitations?
I think ultimately. I think having universal child care is the best way to go. And like I said, when I was talking about it, this is the opening proposal. So there are going to be some people who are going to want to beat it. And there are going to be others who are going to sign on to it. So, yes.
I mean, I hope that Bernie comes out with a universal plan because we really, really need one. And it's like, even if... it's good at the start. I think a universal program is like building your house out of stones, right? And a means-tested one or whatever you want to call it.
It's sliding scale.
Okay. It's like building your house out of sticks. And even if it's the same house to begin with, one is going to be more vulnerable to the elements as time goes on.
Yes. I mean, I think the durability of a completely universal plan that puts everybody on the same footing, I think, is there. And I think probably my guess would be that you're still going to have a significant percentage of people who are going to want to go to private childcare. You're still going to have a significant amount of people who are going to have nannies as opposed to send their kids to daycare. And in some respects, the quality of the program may be better if it has people, higher on the income ladder because they will be more, they tend to have more political power and they'll demand a higher level of quality.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to public schools now, right?
I mean, now what happens is because it's not public schools are not funded from a federal tax. It's a function of the wealth in that specific locality. So this is funded from the wealth tax. So you theoretically would not have that type of disparity from in terms of location. And well, theoretically, you wouldn't have, I mean, the difference is that you're going to have kids who are coming from areas of less wealth. And presumably, you want to send your kid to childcare that's closest to you, right? And you're going to have kids who are going to have more social issues because they're living in poverty. They may not get the same nutrition at home. They may not get exposed to the same things at home. They may not, maybe both their parents are, you know, are working, you know, two jobs, or one of their parents is working two jobs. I mean, et cetera, et cetera. And this, I mean, the theory is that, and so, you know, there may be kids who have more, are more problematic in the context of a daycare, but, you know, we're talking about daycare. And so you don't have the same necessarily, you're trying to socialize kids at most in these situations. And the upshot is that if it's completely free for people living, you know, with 200% of poverty, theoretically, you're going to have a lot of parents who are going to have more time to spend with their children because they're not going to have to work that second job. Or they're going to be able to work while their kids are at daycare as opposed to working when the other parent comes home. I mean, so there's a whole host of benefits. And yes, I think that there's a decent point to be made that, you know, folks living above, you know, 200% of poverty should get it as free as, you know, or, you know, completely expense free as those living below. But I'm not terribly concerned about I'm not convinced about the durability in that situation. This is not a means tested program. This is available to everyone. Everyone's expense is capped on this. Everyone's going to get some measure of subsidy. So it is not that you are ever ineligible for this. That is what means testing means. That's just the definition. And so I don't know if there is as much data on a sliding scale durability as we talk about means testing. Because, I mean, Social Security theoretically, right, is a sliding scale. It caps out at one point. You have a maximum amount of money that you're going to get paid out in your retirement. I mean, so I don't know. It's a good question. And certainly more is better, but this is pretty good.
We have the money, but yes, more like this. We're definitely on the right track. We need it.
We have a entrepreneur on Fox Business talking about what she thinks should be the, how she thinks childcare should be taken care of.
Yeah, there is. This is the thing about childcare, folks, is that you don't want the safety net to turn into a hammock.
Yeah, I'm probably going to get a lot of heat for saying this, but the reality is that the best child care and the best early learning that a kid can get is from his family, whether that is his mom or his dad or a grandparent. That is the best outcome for children when it comes to early education and early care and learning. Now, I understand that that is not everybody's choice, but at some point, individual responsibility has to come into play here. If you want to make a different choice, you have to be responsible for the financial implication of those choices. It is not the government's role to do that. It is not your neighbor's role. It is not the millionaire's role to do that. If you want to make a different choice and you don't want to or feel like you're unable to care for your children, you have to think through the implications of that.
Now, that's Carol J. Roth. I hope she doesn't have a child, because I don't know what she's doing at work. Now, presumably, Carol Roth, who is a radio host and or was and, you know, writes columns and goes on TV, doesn't have a child because she would have to be at home working for her, presumably her husband. Right. But that's just absurd.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the guy who doesn't think we should pay for kids' school lunches, Remember that guy?
Paul Ryan. In?
Well, I guess it's a lot of guys, but the particular one that we talked to, and then I asked him, you know, what would happen if people just stopped having kids? And he was like, oh, well, you know, the human race would end, whatever.
Well, the amazing thing is that this argument that she's making is not going to appeal to anybody outside of that bubble. I mean, that's the thing, is that this is not, and there's undoubtedly people who don't think that the women should stay at home, because that's what this is, right? This is just a women should be in the kitchen argument, sort of dressed up with a little bit of like, it's about the kids, though.
Yeah, you kind of have to make it economically possible for women to be at home with their kids, though, too.
That's right. You gotta.
She calls herself a recovering investment banker.
Ah, geez. Oh, Tucker Carlson had a bit about this too, where he said that it's going to, you know, go along with this like neoliberal globalist feminism, right? So like all of the white women are not going to be home with their kids like they should be, while their husbands are, you know, earning a family wage with the jobs that Trump brought back. They're going to be at work while their kids are taken care of by illegal immigrants.
Well, how would illegal immigrants get jobs in childcare that is subsidized by the federal government?
The liberals are going to give them jobs. Job guarantee for illegal immigrants.
MS-13 members are going to be
number one plank in Bernie's platform.
I mean, this is the, you know, what's interesting, though, about this critique of this. Here it is.
To work as good little servants. American Dream is outsourcing their upbringing to government caretakers while their parents scurry back to work as good little servants of globalized market capitalism. The need for more government daycare specialists will no doubt be justified, be used to justify more immigration. And so the cycle, as you can see, is complete. The Democratic Party started by outsourcing manufacturing, you remember that. Then they outsourced farm labor and yard work. And now they've decided to outsource parenting. Raising your own kids, Elizabeth Warren is telling us, is a job Americans just won't do. Huh.
Well, now, this is just unbelievable. Obviously, Tucker's wife must be raising his kids, I would imagine.
Oh, no. All their wives work at, like, Goldman Sachs, these dudes.
Well, but even you know, putting that aside, what it really does is also show you and our guest is going to talk about this, I think, on some level tomorrow. It also shows you the economic foundations of sexism and misogyny, right? Like, this just makes it completely obvious and naked that the idea why you want to make it too expensive for women to go to work. Now, of course, this is completely ignoring the reality of a huge swath of men and women, right? Where it's not a question of, you know, can I get to work? It's just a question of, will I ever see the kid, right? Because many of these people are working, these couples are working two jobs, even if they have the kid at home. It's just that they're leaving at night. Or maybe one of the parents is working two jobs and never sees the kids. But he's going to ignore those, because he wants to talk about the real Americans. But even when in the context of his real Americans, it shows that how economic deprivation or the concept of economic coercion reinforces these social structures that folks like Tucker Carlson, who apparently believes very strongly in the notion of a patriarchy. Although I'm sure he would say, like, no, I'm perfectly fine with the husband staying at home and the wife going out to work, despite the fact that she would make significantly, you know, 10-15% less than the husband in the job force. But nevertheless, they know where the numbers land on this. And this is the way that they use economic coercion to subjugate women, because it fits their religiously formed code of how the family should look and act.
Yeah, and he uses his disingenuous critique of capitalism once more to try to advance a different version of capitalism that he thinks is better, and he's not going to say it, but whiter.
Whiter and more Christian.
I mean, he did say it, right? He talked about Christian. Immigrants.
And more religious, I should probably say.
Because, like, yeah, it does suck that a lot of couples don't really have a choice. Everyone has to work all the time and not spend time with their kids, and everyone's tired and feels like shit. But the answer to that is not more economic coercion, generally speaking.
Indeed. All right. We got to take a break here and go to the fun half. But before we do, what's that? Oh, yeah. Before we do that, though, I think we should do the Bregman thing. Because I want everybody to see this. I mean, we're going to, in the fun half, we'll talk about the DiFi meeting with young people from the same organization, Sunrise, I think it was, the same organization that occupied Nancy Pelosi's office and is currently, I think at this moment, occupying Mitch McConnell's office. We'll talk about that in the fun half. But you'll recall, I don't know, about a week or two ago, 3 weeks ago, we played a clip of this guy, Bregman.
Rutger Bregman.
Rutger Bregman. He is a Danish history professor, and he was at Davos, and he didn't get the same coverage as... what was it? Who's the first guy?
Onninger Dardis.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. He's actually Dutch.
Oh, Dutch. Okay. And the didn't get the same coverage, but I think we even included the clip. But he made a very similar point where he was like, you know, we're out here at Davos and they're talking about all these different things. And the one thing that nobody's paying attention to is taxes. Rich need to pay more taxes, period. And so that caused quite a stir, and this is where Tucker Carlson's veneer that Jamie was just alluding to gets ripped off, where he pretends like, you know, Tucker wants to have this, is projecting, is trying to develop an image that makes it look like he's taking on the establishment. Because he knows no matter what happens to Trump, there's going to be a bunch of Trump voters out there who are going to be disaffected. And these are the guys that he's applying, you know, he's, and make no mistake about it, Tucker's playing a role. And he is, it's not completely disingenuous, because he's also, at the heart of this role is sort of the same thing that I think Pat Buchanan was running on 30 years ago, which is a fundamentalist, a religious fundamentalist worldview that sees some elements of capitalism as profane because they undercut the religious worldview that they want. And so he's able to talk a good game about this stuff unless it starts to dig and cut a little bit too close to the bone.
Yeah.
And so he brings on this guy Bregman, Rutger Bregman, after Bregman's sort of, I guess, his moment at Davos. And Bregman does something that maybe he could do it because I think he was actually, he was in Europe, I believe, when he was doing this. He wasn't in studio. I don't know where he was, but he had access to the feed in a way that most people don't. And somebody was recording it with his phone. And we had noticed this before we left for vacation, that Bregman had tweeted at Tucker Carlson, how come you're not going to play the interview that we did? And we're wondering what it was. Well, now this obtained this footage and shows how the full segment between Bregman and Tucker Carlson went. And we're gonna play it. Sorry now this, but this is stuff is more important than just the accruing the hits.
Finest gold prince, and no one's allowed to speak about water. That's one of the great moments, maybe the great moment in Davos history. Rutger Bregman is the
author of Utopia for Realists, and he joins us now. Mr. Bregman, I can't stop laughing just listening to that. And part of that makes me wonder, are you the first person ever to note that people are flying private to talk about global warming and that none of them mention tax avoidance? Has anyone ever said that before at Davos that you know of?
Pause it for 1 second. So now on this, you cannot see Tucker on it. All he is in the studio looking at the feed that's going. So you just hear Tucker.
Sure, I'm not an expert on Davos history, but it is a bit hypocritical, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And others have noted that. We've noted it on this show. We've just never gone to Davos and said it out loud as you did. So
pause it. You can hear, I can see Tucker. There's a picture here of him, but I could see Tucker really enjoying this and thinking like, oh my God, this is cool for me. I found this guy and I'm totally on top of this.
Has he always been this much of a speed freak?
Take it off to you. What response did you get?
They were not very happy with me, but I'm just a random Dutch historian who's basically saying what everyone around the globe is thinking. You know, the vast majority of Americans, for years and years now, according to the polls, including Fox News viewers and including Republicans, are in favor of higher taxes on the rich. You know, higher inheritance taxes, higher top marginal tax rates, higher wealth taxes. It's all really mainstream. But no one's saying that at Davos, just as no one's saying it on Fox News, right? And I think the explanation for that is quite simple, is that most of the people in Davos, but also here on this channel, have been bought by the billionaire class. You know, you're not meant to say these things. So I just went there and I thought, you know what? I'm just going to say it, just as I'm saying it right here on this channel.
What was interesting, I thought, about what you said, was you noticed something. I mean, many people have called for higher taxes.
Well, not on this channel, is it? I mean, almost all of the pundits on this channel for years have been against higher taxes, right? Even though the vast majority of Americans is in favor of it.
I mean, I don't know. It would be interesting to know how many hours of Fox you've watched, but I'm interested in what you said about tax avoidance.
Pause it. Hold on. Now, see, Tucker realizes, at first he tries to ignore where he was going, and then he realizes, and then you can hear him as he's starting to realize, this is going sideways, and how am I going to bring this back? I'm just going to have a little bit of shot across the bow, because most of the guests that they have on that Tucker's not sure of, this is the way of Tucker corralling. This is I sent the sheepdog out to push him back in line, and apparently it's not going to work.
I mean, I don't know. It would be interesting to know how many hours of Fox you've watched, but I'm interested in what you said about tax avoidance. So
yeah.
Just because someone faces a specific tax rate does not mean that person pays that tax rate at all. I don't think Netflix, for example, paid any taxes last year at all. So what would you do specifically to make certain that this class of people pays what they're supposed to pay?
Well, it's about multiple things. So we should really crack down on tax paradises and on tax avoidance. That's a major issue. But it's also about having higher taxes. So in the 1950s, for example, in the 1960s, in the golden age of capitalism, as historians called it, we had top marginal tax rate for the very rich of about, 70, 80, 90%. Actually under Eisenhower, the Republican president. And this was also, one of the best periods in American history. Same is true for the UK and the rest of Europe. So as a historian, for me, it's all not, it's really not rocket science. We should go back to simple and straightforward solutions from the past.
Right. But this country was sustained, and since you're a historian, I guess you would know this, sustained by an industrial economy at the time that was broad and deep. That created a middle class that doesn't exist anymore. So it's an entirely different economy. I wish it did exist.
But that's not really an issue.
Would it work the same way with an entirely different economy?
Well, I think it would. America is still pretty much the most powerful country in the world, right? So if it really would want to, it could easily crack down on tax paradises. But the thing is, you guys have brought into power a president that doesn't even want to show its own tax returns. Who knows how many billions he has hidden in the Cayman Islands or in Bermuda? So I think the issue really is one of corruption and of people being bribed and of not being, you know, not talking about the real issues. What the family, you know, what the Murdochs basically want you to do is to scapegoat immigrants instead of talking about tax avoidance. So I'm glad you're now finally raising the issue. But that's what been happening for the past couple of years.
Uh-huh. And I'm taking orders from the Murdochs, is that what you're saying?
No, I mean, it doesn't work that directly. But, I mean, you've been part of the Cato Institute, right? You've been a senior fellow there for years. You've been taking their dirty money. They're funded by Koch billionaires, you know?
Wait, why don't you tell me how it does work?
Well, it works by you taking their dirty money. It's as easy as that. I mean, you are a millionaire funded by billionaires. That's what you are. And I'm glad you now finally jumped the bandwagon, you know, of people like Bernie Sanders and AOC. But you're not part of the solution, Mr. Carlson. You're part of the problem, actually.
It's true, right?
That all the anchors... All the anchors on Fox, they're all millionaires. How is this possible? Well, it's very easy. You're just not talking about certain things.
Fox doesn't even play where you are.
It doesn't play where you are. Well, have you heard of the internet? I can watch things whatever I want, you know? I have, actually. I can't say I'm a great fan of your show, but I do my homework when you invite me on your show. So... I mean, you're probably not going to air this, but I went to Davos to speak truth to power, and I'm doing exactly the same thing right now. You may not like it, but you're a millionaire funded by billionaires, and that's the reason why you're not talking about these issues.
But I am talking about these issues.
Yeah, only now. Come on, you jumped the bandwagon. You're all like, oh, I'm against the globalist elite, blah, blah, blah. It's not very convincing, to be honest.
Why don't you go f*** yourself, you tiny brain, and I hope this gets picked up, because you're a moron. I tried to give you a hearing, but you were too f***ing annoying for me.
You can't handle the criticism, can you?
That's how you do Fox.
Oh.
You have to go on expecting to never be invited back, and you've done it right.
The tricky part is it's hard to get that type of footage. Like, I think you need to be like an American, in most American stringers, essentially, places where you go in, they either do not have that monitor available, or it's conceivable to me there could be another person. I'm presumably... That was not him video, although it's conceivable to me that he also videotaped it after the fact, that they ran back the video because, you know, it's different in a foreign country. But if you get the right person, but that was pretty sweet. And you know what? Here's what I'm going to say. I don't think Tucker Carlson hoped that it get picked up. He said it, but I don't actually believe that was the case.
Yeah, but he comes off so not owned in that video and definitely not mad.
But that's the thing, too, is it got under his skin so badly. He was so, because he was so excited up front. Like, I have squared the circle. Like, I have been able to bring it together. I got the guy who criticized power at Davos, and this is how, with my jujitsu, I turn it into some type of, like, pro, you know, women need to stay in the kitchen type of white people are great narrative. And he just got faced. That was really a work of art, I have to say. Very impressive. All right, we got to take a break, head into the fun half. Just a reminder, folks, you can get this show commercial free by becoming a member. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Become a member for only nickels a day, and we give you the first half commercial free. We generally don't go this long, but, you know, first day back type of situation. And then we give you more content after that. Another, I don't know, hour and a half. Sometimes two, for God's sakes. And your support keeps this show functioning and working. Don't forget, Michael will probably be back from his extended vacation, I guess, tomorrow. I don't know.
I think
Maybe for, because TMBS is tomorrow, right? So we know he'll be back by 7 p.m. tomorrow night. You can watch it live on the TMBS YouTube channel. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Don't forget, not only is it delicious coffee, but it's also a great, great, great company. Jamie, the Antifada, my understanding is that you actually worked on your vacation.
Indeed.
Wow, that's not a vacation, Jamie.
Well, I was very sick for most of it, but I managed to bookend that with some very productive recording sessions. So I'm just going to read a little blurb about it. So here we go. On this week's Antifada, we did something a little bit different. For all of you theory heads out there, Sean was joined by our comrades at Swampside Chats and Brett from Rev Left Radio to do a deep dive on communization theory, an ultra-left tendency that came out of the France post-May 68. Came out of France post-May 68. Pretty exciting time in France. And is now a specter.
Soissons, retards.
Indeed. Very good. And is now a... Très bien. Is now a specter haunting the Anglophone world. Get the bong rips ready. You're going to need them. We also recorded yesterday with Hamilton Nolan from formerly of Gawker, now of Splinter. We talked about union organizing in the media and the future of the labor movement in the U.S. So that's coming out on Wednesday of this week. And I also still recommend our episode with Corey Pine that came out like a week or so ago and didn't really have a chance to promote it because we were on break.
There you go.
Most recently on Literary Hangover, The Unparalleled Adventures of One Hans Fall by Edgar Allan Poe. It's a early sci-fi, maybe the first, maybe not, probably not the first, but an early version of sci-fi where a guy goes into debt and makes his creditors help him construct a hot air balloon and then blows his creditors up on the launch pad as he takes a hot air balloon to the moon.
Smart play. Hey, folks, thanks again to LifeLock Identity Theft Protection for supporting today's show. Of course, no one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. With LifeLock, you get identity theft protection and additional features to help protect your devices against cyber threats for as low as $9.99 a month. Don't waste another second. Visit LifeLock.com/majority now to save 10% on your first year. That's LifeLock.com/majority for 10% off. LifeLock.com/majority. Don't forget, tomorrow, go out, vote in that special election. Public advocate, Naomi Const, needs your vote. Would be... the first time I think we have someone in that position who has really owes no one anything in the developer world and no one owes no one nothing to anyone in the New York State Democratic apparatus. And that, I think, is pretty powerful stuff.
She can go Rutger Bregman on their ass.
She could totally go Rutger Bregman on them. I mean, except for like the, you know, weird pronunciation of things like DeVos. And that was, I kept waiting for him, for Tucker to actually say at one point, like, how come you keep mispronouncing it?
That's what Tucker should have done. Just make fun of his accent.
Yeah, learn to speak English.
Weird. All right, folks. See you to fun F.